Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson, and we were just talking about, in response to someone asking us the question, how do I become a reliability engineering consultant?
Oh, that's easy, Chris. Somebody sends you money for the work and advice you do for them, and now, poof, you're a consultant.
Okay, well, that's a short podcast.
Okay. Maybe... You know, if you'd like to get in touch with us with any of your questions. I get this question pretty often. How do you answer this one, Chris? How do you answer this one?
With difficulty. I think a lot of people who ask this, I'll go through my process as well. I mean, I think it's impossible to be completely understand what it's going to take. And I think I'm still trying to learn on a daily basis, like most consultants would be, what it takes to be a good consultant. And I think there's this perception, I get from people who ask me is, okay, so I've got the skills, I've got everything I need to, how do I just press play on phase two of my career? And I think what I try to do is ask them to back up the bus, and I say, well, okay, what would you say to someone who's going to engage you as a consultant? And I invariably get a list of things they can do. I can wire this, I can make it that, I can, you know, field data analysis this. Okay, but if someone's got a need for field data analysis, sure, they'll do an all points bulletin to the people that they know who can do it, which might not be you. But if you're going to try and convince someone who wasn't anticipating on using you, what would you say? And that's where I think a lot of people then take a step back and either take some time to think about it or just don't take it seriously and go, I don't need to worry about that. I've got the skills, I've got the qualifications, I'm good to go. Is that broadly similar to your experience?
I back that bus up even further. The nature of our business is if you put up a website, that doesn't mean, it's not like putting a billboard up, you know, on the major commute route where all your customers are. Even there, they're probably not going to see it. You know, it's not the nature of our advertising to do it. It's people need to know, like, and trust you in order to engage you. It's sort of like getting hired, but we don't send resumes out at random, right? People don't look for consultants by posting a job opening. Now, some do. I mean, there are types of consulting work. There's different types of consulting. There's people that are just contracts, right? I got a year, I'm going to work with this group for a year as essentially an employee, but under a contract, and I'm going to do reliability engineering work. At the end of the year, I'm going to go find another contract someplace. And some people thrive on that. They have a steady pay, except when they're transitioning. They have to be constantly aware of when their contract ends and is it going to renew or do I need to find another one? And there are agencies that help people find those positions that are out there. That's one style of consulting, is to go out for hire, you know, on a consult and a contract basis, and be a pair of hands is one way I've heard that described. If I need somebody to turn these bolts, well, then I hire somebody that can turn bolts. If I need somebody to do data analysis for the year, then I go find somebody that can do a service that will provide me a person that can do that. Then there's the trusted advisor, or I'm drawing a blank on what the third type is, but the part of reliability consulting where you get paid for your knowledge and your skills and experience is you have to be known. Whether it's through technical writing and journal articles or writing for trade magazines or presenting at local chapter meetings or at conferences, writing a blog post, doing a podcast, all of those things are ways for people to get to know you. And I have found, even when I was at Hewlett-Packard, that the vast majority of the projects that came my way were because they saw a presentation I did 2 years prior, or they saw it. It was a long ramp. And I've rarely run into somebody that says, oh, I just got laid off. I want to be a consultant now. How do I get started? Well, you should have started 5 years ago. you know, what's your Google resume? If you Google yourself, do you get five pages of how you've contributed to the art of reliability engineering? You know, have you been teaching people? You've been presenting? Have you been writing about it? Stuff like that. No. Well, then your alternative then is to go find an organization that helps people find engagements. You know, and Mike Silverman with Ops a la Carte did that. He had, at one point, I think he had 50 different people in the tent, basically, of people he would send projects to. But he had created just a machine to find leads and get leads. But he was at conferences. He was talking to folks all the time. And he could generate tons and tons of leads. And that's how I got started. But the funny thing is, the very first project I had was when I was thinking of quitting HP and go become a consultant, working with Mike, with Ops a la Carte. I got a phone call saying, hey, we saw you do a presentation 2 years ago. Can you come work for us as a consultant? And I was, my first project was not with Ops a la Carte. They found me, and it was because of the, being visible in that space, being recognized. And so how do I become a reliability consultant? I think it's part, you have to have some technical skills. You have to know what you're doing, right? And I almost always advise people that either you are a specialty where there's enough demand for that specialty that you will stay gainfully employed, or you look at it in the broad brush and be capable and good in a couple areas, but capable in a broad set of areas so that you can become an organization's reliability engineer and advise and train, coach and mentor, and actually roll up your sleeves and do the data analysis and, you know, do the stuff. But how do you become one? First, you got to want to. It's, and you mentioned it briefly, Chris, it's different. I remember the first project they did, and I sent my invoice in, and they said, all right, great, we'll be back in 2 months. Like, well, wait a second, I got to pay bills this weekend. You know, so you have to be comfortable with an unsteady supply of funds. Is sometimes you have 8 invoices out, and sometimes you have 1. And sometimes you have a big accounts receivable coming in, and sometimes it's not. And it varies. If you need X number of dollars every week, you got to plan ahead. That just unnerves so many people I've run into when they get into consulting.
Well, it's not just that. It's just the comfort of having a salary. If you don't have your own, I don't have a salary, that is, it's confronting, and it's, it takes some getting used to, and every different person has their own different experience. But there are some sleepless nights. There are some issues revolving around mental health when you become a consultant, because you're putting it out there. You're potentially putting your entire family's future out there. At least that's the story you're telling yourself.
Yeah.
It's not straightforward, and if you think there's no transition to be had, you're kidding yourself. And I think consultants are always in a state of transition, which is probably not a bad way of describing it. Is that fair enough?
Oh yeah. No. And well, my experience has been working with typically shorter engagements on a couple of cases, clients I've worked with where they basically fully employed me for a year, kind of situation. But when I came out of that, the pipeline was dry. I've been turning down and referring out all these engagements and not actively looking for projects for a year. And I had to restart that process again and start getting engaged again. So I went from a nice, steady, decent engagement with a steady check showing up to nothing for about 3 months. You know, and had to rebuild it, start working with a few people, and then send in the invoices and wait for that to get paid. But recognizing that that was where I was, you know, then I just saved more, put more away to deal with it. But it's, that's, I found that surprises some people. Now, you can work for like headhunter agencies or consulting agencies. The downside is they find you projects, but they also keep half of it or more in some cases. The other way to think of it is, how do I become a reliability consultant? Is in your role now within an organization, assuming that you're working full time for some company, is think like a reliability consultant. Is practice identifying issues you can solve, you know, write proposals, get support, you know, quantify the value. All of those things are what you do.
That's good advice.
Oh, I knew if I talked long enough, I'd find one piece of good advice out there.
I think, again, we all walk different paths and different organizations make it easier, but actually I've never thought of that before. And I think the ability to go and convince that VP over there that they should take reliability seriously, if you can do that internally, that is great. It's a great dress rehearsal for doing it on the outside as well. Mm-hmm. That's right on the money, that one.
Well, that's, I think, how do you become a reliability consultant is the simple answer is you just behave like a consultant. And what that means is that the best piece of advice I ever got, and this was when I was learning to become an internal consultant at Hewlett Packard, was that with every engagement, with every phone call, with every email, with every visit, you add value. You do something that helps them. And it builds credibility so that, oh, well, I'm going to bring Fred back because he helped us with this little thing like 8 times over the last year. What if we bring him in for this bigger project? I like the way he works. And I remember one of my favorite clients, I asked her at one time after we'd been working together on and off on projects for a couple of years and actually wrote a paper together, how did you find me? You know, I don't make a habit of asking. So where did this lead come from? How did you find me? Or why'd you pick me? Because I knew you were doing comparative stuff. And she said, I met you at a conference. I asked you the same question I asked every other consultant that was there. And you're the only one that actually tried to answer the question and gave me a framework to go answer it and actually recommended a couple of resources. And then you didn't ask me like everybody else did. Well, how much money do you have? In so many words, she said, you weren't scoping how much you could charge. You were trying to actually help me answer the question. And I have found that the successful client or successful consultants focus on what actually helps the clients, not themselves. Mm-hmm. And it comes around. You will do fine. I think there's the technical skill, the attitude, and the people need to be aware that you're available and what you can do. So back to what you were talking about, what is it you're going to offer them and how do you express that? But a website's not enough. But printing up business cards, geez, when was the last time you gave anybody a business card, Chris?
Geez, well, I think COVID-19 has put a... has obviously killed that exchange the last year or so. But now you're right. Before then, it wasn't a lot. In fact, I was giving business cards out to props just so I could get rid of them because I just had too many.
Yeah.
Some are holding up like the wonky desks in the house. Because,
that's right. I'm using them as bookmarkers in the various books I have open. I just stick a business card in there to mark the page.
I do think there's one thing we haven't talked about yet, and that's the lifestyle of a consultant. There's, one thing I do miss from working as part of a team, and you know, you and I are both ex-military and worked in organisations as part of a bigger employee base. Is you do miss the people interaction, I should say. You're not a part of a bigger team that is going to be at that organisation. Once that particular problem has been solved, once you've solved the problem as a consultant, you disappear and you might keep in touch with a couple of people, but it's just not the same. So you need to make a very substantial personal adjustment to a lifestyle where you're not interacting with the same people day in, day out, and forming long-lasting relationships. And you're doing a lot more work at your home office and out and about. And that's not for everyone. Regardless of how good or bad an engineer you are, it just might be more enjoyable for you to be in an organization which says nothing about your professional ability to be a good or bad consultant. It's just something that I think I knew about it, but I think I underestimated the change that was going to have to happen on a personal level. I don't know. Did you experience something similar?
I guess I was eased into it. Even in when I worked at Raycam, when I got out of the military, I was in a part of a division that were making products, and I worked as a shift supervisor and a manufacturing engineer, and then a design, then a reliability engineer or R&D engineer, but I did reliability stuff. We had people around and techs and other engineers, and we could pull together a team and talk about stuff. We did a lot of training together, but even then I started working from home because I lived like an hour and a half away, and in Bay Area traffic was a nightmare and still is. And so I relished having a day a week at home. And then eventually I got to 2 to 3 days a week because I was so much more productive. And so when I got to HP, almost when I got into the reliability group, nearly every engagement I did, unless I was on site with them, was on the phone. The team was always on the phone with everybody else around the world. It didn't matter if we're in the office or not. And on occasion, yeah, it was nice to be able to go, hey, you know, Sarah, you're the material science expert. What do you think of this? But I could call her, right?
Yeah.
And so I was working probably 9 days out of 10 at home already. Right. And so transitioning to working at home that's what I did already. So that wasn't hard for me at all. But having a good, strong network, I think that's critical, is whether you build that up through conference connections or through your people you've worked with or other professional outlets. I think you still need people you can chat with, you can bounce ideas off of, that you can, you know, look for extra resources. Those kind of things you still need as a consultant. It really isn't a one person show, even though you're just a single person in your company. It's still a team effort.
Yeah. I think that you at least have to acknowledge that there is going to be a different dynamic personally.
Oh yeah.
And if you can't handle it or it's not something you want, that's okay.
One of my favorite criticisms, I was at HP and I was acting like a consultant because we were essentially working with the separate divisions and charging our money for our time. And this one woman, a statistician, looked at me like, I don't want to talk to no stinking consultant. They're like fleas. You never get rid of them. And she just kind of just didn't like this idea at all. So I swung by her desk. I was up there anyway. So I swung by her desk and said, so you think I'm a flea now, do you? So I called her bluff on that. We ended up working together very closely on a big project for him that turned out really well. So hopefully she changed her attitude about the role of a consultant, but do my small part there to overcome that bias.
Yeah, well, fleas, they suck blood.
That's right. That's what she meant, is they latch on and drain you and then move on to the next victim. You know, it's like, and then they seed all kinds of other projects to make sure they stay there longer and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I do need to confess a bias. I am no fan of those big organizations which typically have four-letter acronyms make up their names, which are just professional consultant cartels that focus all their resources on sort of parasiting all the possible relationships, especially with, you know, government agencies and military, that just sort of work out how to own I don't know, the attention span of those organizations, where those organizations feel like they have to go with one of these big organizations because that's just sort of what's done. If anything else, you go through a contact anybody else on an email or website basis, it's obviously not, it just seems amateurish to them. Mm-hmm. or whatever the reason is, that whatever the narrative has been created, where these big organizations, these consultant cartels, have been able to dominate high level stuff, and that they're just the people they send are whoever's available on that particular day. They are, even though they might be employed that organization, they're in many cases consultants in nature, and they'll jump from cartel to cartel to cartel. So there's no single binding, you know, measure of excellence or cultural uniqueness amongst these organizations. They just soak up that high level consulting space, which I think has a very bad effect on the consulting industry.
Yeah, I didn't mention that. That is an option. You can go to, I'm thinking of McKinsey, and I don't even know if they do reliability consulting, but these mm-hmm. massive groups, and they'll send in, you know, we're going to send in the person that gets billed at $1,200 an hour, oversees the project, and they, half the plane is full of consultants that are flying into your site, and they're going to be there for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And it's, in some cases, you know, if you're swapping out a major software system, you need a lot of keyboard junkies to make it happen. Well, then you need 50 people showing up and doing
yep.
it.
Yep.
But it's what you described is the, where they've inserted themselves in that industry in such a way that you can't get around them. And, mm-hmm. and their goal, express goal, I've run into a couple of these, is, well, how many billable hours can we get? Right. We're going to send 40 people over there, and we'll rack up the hours. And they're, if we're not productive, we'll just send more people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, no, no.
Yeah. That's where a lot of bad perceptions start, it's sad to say. But
Become that kind of consultant. If you want to be a consultant, don't be that one. But how do you get started? You start long before you get your first engagement, because the awareness part takes time. People need to know you and that you're available and what kind of skills you have and trust you. And then you have to have that attitude. I think we've summarized that pretty well, is that it's a change. It's a different dynamic, both socially and pay-wise and stuff. And then you've got to actually be able to focus on what adds value. If you want repeat customers, don't be a flea. You know, actually solve the problem for them and help them understand how to do it themselves, and they'll come back. I've run into that over and over again. Whereas, mm-hmm. and the best part is they come back with more interesting projects and problems. If they wanted me just to hit a keyboard 20 times, I'm not interested in those projects. So I always try to provide sufficient value and education and leave them in a better state, so that they can do it themselves. And that almost always turns into they come back with better questions and more sophisticated issues they're trying to solve, which is great. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And don't bother with the business cards.
No. I think they're nice to have just to make you feel like you've made it.
But, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Letterhead. I started consulting on my own in early 2000s. And I thought briefly about creating a letterhead and very quickly dropped that. I have, you know, proposal forms, you know, it has a letterhead on it. And I thought about printing it and I'm like, who am I going to mail this to? Mm-hmm. You know, I guess I don't need to do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it doesn't take much to become a consultant. It's willingness, a bit of knowledge, and people are aware of what you can do. None of those are easy though. No. You got to have your act together.
Or sometimes natural. Some people are just natural at it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't classify me as a naturally good at it. I'm still pushing my boundaries, but I think there are some people who are really good at, or natural consultants, and sometimes at the expense of technical skills. But mm-hmm. yeah, really is up to your own. You need to work out what it is you're trying to do, what you're trying to sell. I really like your advice about trying to be a consultant in whatever organization you are right now. Mm-hmm. Even if you get shot down, it's good practice.
Yep, because you will get shot down as a consultant.
Oh, yeah.
There's no doubt about it. But yeah, you got to be resilient.
Marriage has helped me for that shooting down. Dealing with it.
Like a lot. One of the caveats or one of the benefits of being a consultant, especially when you are not struggling and you've got a sufficient income flow and project funnel coming towards you and all that stuff, is if a client is just pain to work with, you can fire them. You can just say, all right, we're done. I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
It's not like quitting a job. It's a smaller, for me, it's usually a smaller project, but I've got 10 clients I'm working with at the moment. And if one of them is a pain, they're not worth my time to work with. So I like, you're done. I'm not working for you anymore. Well, you can't do that. We're under contract. Yeah, I can. I'll send it in writing. here you go. You're on your own. You're a pain. Mm-hmm. Well, you'll be blacklisted. You'll never work in this industry again. And this is okay. If you say so. You know, to walk across the street to his competitor and started a new contract right off the bat. I'm like, yep, go away. Anyway, that story for another day. So anyway, thanks, Chris. Good question. Glad it came up. It's one that I know we've talked about on the podcast here, probably 600 episodes ago. It was one of the very early ones that we did. So it's time to revisit that. I think we fleshed it out pretty nicely. So if you've are considering being a consultant, or what is it that consultants do, and there's different types and stuff, or got some other question that you would like us to discuss on the show, let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. You can find a contact form there. You can also find Chris and I and the other hosts of the show on LinkedIn or on our about pages. And you can get in touch with us many different ways. Certainly look forward to your participation in the conversation. So with that, Chris, let's go figure out where our next paycheck's coming from.
Absolutely. Thanks, Fred.
Talk to you later.
Cheers, see ya.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.